modern science is a fruit of the Reformation. Francis Bacon, the father of the scientific method, put it this way. There are two books laid before us to study to prevent us from falling into error. The first is the volume of the scriptures which reveals the will of God, and then the volume of his creatures which expresses his power. You've got special revelation of the Bible, general revelation in nature. Historian Robert Frank points out the predominant forms of scientific activity can be shown to be a direct outflow of Puritan ideology. The Puritans get a lot of bad press. A lot of people hate the Puritans, but the fact is the Puritans are always in the forefront of the battle for freedom, and the forefront of bringing about separation of powers, constitutional forms of government, whether in Holland or in England or in Switzerland or in Germany. The Puritans are always, and America, they're in the forefront of scientific advance, scientific discoveries, education for all people, universal education, and particularly scientific discoveries. The great astronomer Johannes Kepler, 1571 to 1630, the founder of celestial mechanics, he declared, "My wish is that I may perceive the God whom I find everywhere in the external world in like manner within me." Kepler was a brilliant mathematician and an astronomer, and he contributed to the scientific revolution with his work on the planetary orbits, the laws of motion, and scientific methods. Kepler's accomplishments formed the foundation of modern theoretical astronomy. Now, you understand, astrology is superstitious rubbish. Astrology. Astronomy is the science. Astrology is the superstition. The Hindu religions like astrology, and there's people who look in the newspapers every day and they see, what do my stars say? And this idea that somehow when you were born affects what's going to happen to the rest of you in terms of what particular star sign you were born under, that is superstitious and nonsense. Astrology makes you a prisoner. Astronomy enables you to plan the future better, to get good calendars and maps. So astronomy is a science, astrology is not. Kepler saw astronomy as a glimpse of God's glory. Kepler argued, truth in religion is based on the word of God and scripture, while truth in natural science is based on evidence and reason. And the two are completely in harmony. Kepler viewed all of science as man attempting to think God's thoughts after him. In one real sense, none of us can be original. God is the only real original creator of anything. When a great artist comes up with a wonderful work, what they're doing is thinking God's thoughts after him. All the beauty God has put in nature, and it's for us to discover it. We can't make anything in one sense, in a scientific way, but we think God's thoughts after him. God has put all the laws in motion, we can discover it. We can think God's thoughts after him. God has made everything possible, and it's our joy to be co-laborers under him. Kepler was the father of the modern satellite and of modern space travel, even though he lived so many hundreds of years ago, because of how he set in motion all the laws of motion, scientific method, and planetary orbits. So Isaac Newton, 1642 to 1727, is the father of calculus and of dynamics. He was a scientific genius and a dedicated Christian. Newton formulated the theory of gravitation and the laws of motion. He discovered that white light is composed of the colors of the spectrum, and he made vital contributions to mathematics, to astronomy, and to physics. Newton maintained that there are two key sources of knowledge, one revealed in the Bible, and the other revealed in nature, the Word of God and the works of God, special revelation and general revelation. Newton believed that in order to truly know the Creator, one must study the natural order of things. Newton dedicated his life to know the Word of God, the Bible, and the works of God, creation. What about Blaise Pascal, 1623 to 1662? Blaise Pascal made vital contributions to mathematics and technology that helped with the development of the computer. Pascal invented the first adding machine, and in his honor, a computer language is named after Pascal. Charles Babbage, 1792 to 1871, is called the father of the modern-day computer science. He described the whole world as a great computer and as God as the programmer. You just think of how every human cell has so much information. Now, I'm not a scientist and I'm not a biologist, but I'm told by people who know these things much better than me. There's more information in one of our cells of our body than in this laptop computer. Now, I've got hundreds of PowerPoint presentations, tens of thousands of pictures, high-definition pictures in this computer. I've got tens of thousands of letters and articles and all sorts of other things in there, including 2,500, I'm told, that I haven't read. And there's all sorts of material in there. And yet I'm told there's more information in one cell of my body than there is in this computer. Mind-boggling. And, of course, the cells in your body are self-reproducing, which, of course, the computer is not. If you had somebody type out one character a second, the information in the DNA, DNA information in one of the cells of your body, and he typed one character a second 24 hours a day, every day of the year, it would take 169 years to type out the information in one cell in your body. Now, that should boggle our brains. And yet, Charles Darwin, the evolutionist, spoke of the simple cell. He didn't have a clue what he was talking about. He didn't realize how complex a cell was. That's before they discovered the DNA codes and all of that. However, what we do know is that Charles Darwin said, I freely confess, that to suggest that the human eye evolved is foolishness in the extreme. 1 million nerve endings had to meet up with exactly the right partners of another million nerve endings for you to be able to see at all. You've got 160 million light-sensitive rods in one eyeball to be able to see and to process what is out there. When you go outside, you just think of the thousands of trees and tens of thousands of blades of grass and all sorts of other things that you can see, of clouds, and all of that's being processed in your eye in a second. Every single day, you're making tens of thousands of focusings and adjustments to your eyes. There is not anything in the world that human beings can make that can compare to the eye which God made. And do you know that scientists back in the early 1800s were convinced that the locomotive could not be used for transporting people because it was scientifically proven that a human body could not survive speeds of over 40 miles an hour. They were convinced that if you went over 40 miles an hour, you would not be able to stay alive. And up till then, the fastest you could travel would be by horse. There was this complete conviction that the locomotive was unusable for human transport because it was too fast. But today, we now know we can have pilots traveling at Mach 2, twice the speed of sound, in a jet fighter, and he can see, process, and respond in split seconds with the controls in order to do dogfights in the sky and all the other funny things they've got to do. The human body and the human eye can do amazing things. We are like a great computer, and God is the programmer. Babbage was essentially a mathematician. He regarded mathematics as the best preliminary preparation for all other branches of human knowledge. He believed the studies of the works of nature with scientific precision was a necessary and indispensable preparation for the understanding and interpreting of their testimony of the wisdom and goodness of the divine author. Samuel Morse was the man responsible for the development of the modern telegraph and the Morse code. That's why it's called the Morse code. This was one of the greatest innovations in the world of communication. Up till then, the fastest you could communicate would be, well, aside from signal fires on a mountain or reflecting some with a mirror, which would communicate something, or maybe flags being saran poured from ships. But aside from that, complex communication, you'd need to write it down, and someone would have to carry it on a horseback, and that was the fastest you could go, which is under 40 miles an hour. But the telegraph enabled you to communicate detailed messages over great distances. Samuel Morse was a dedicated Christian, and he deeply absorbed his family's Calvinism, which he eventually translated and applied to all of his scientific work. In 1844, Samuel Morse astonished the United States Congress, gathered in the Supreme Court chamber, by sending the words from Numbers 23:23, "What hath God wrought?" The very first words communicated were the words of Scripture to inaugurate this great invention. First intercity telegraph line in world communication. Morse, as an inventor, saw his work as a service for God. He laid the foundations for the development of modern communications, which today includes everything from fax machines through email and cell phones and SMSs and whatever else. It's all started. This is the granddaddy of it all. The telegraph. In the realm of physics, Sir Michael Faraday is acknowledged as one of the greatest scientists of all time. He discovered electromagnetic induction, without which we would have no motor cars, no engines. He invented the generator, the He's put together everything here. So you see, magnetic fields, secondary electrons, primary ions, graphite, insulator, permanent magnets, current meter, all of that. And Faraday was a devout Christian. And he declared, the Bible and the Bible alone, with nothing added to it nor taken away from it by man, is the sole and sufficient guide for each individual at all times and in all circumstances. Faith in the divinity and work of Christ is the gift of God, and the evidence of this faith is obedience to the commands of Christ. I mean, that's pretty all-encompassing. Lord Kelvin, one of the greatest scientists of all times, formulated the metric temperature scale that we use, Celsius. He formulated the science of thermodynamics. He gave us the first and the second laws of thermodynamics, including the law of entropy. Now, the second law of thermodynamics is a great problem for evolutionists, as the evolutionists want to suggest that everything evolved from simple to complex, by random chance, by accident, from mud to monkeys to man, from goo to the zoo to you. A whole lot of time and a whole lot of nothing made everything. Science fiction. This whole idea that you could have something as complex as a human eye evolve. Imagine a machine that can, with a hand, make a hand that can pick up an egg without crushing it, and pick up a rock without dropping it. The same hand. Machines would need different machines for those two different things. I mean, just the complexity of what you do every day without thinking. The complexity of the brain and eyes and every human cell. Now, you will know the second law of thermodynamics. Your room doesn't get tidy on its own. It takes effort. Left alone, it'll just get dustier, dirtier, and chaotic. The garden doesn't get more beautiful without effort. You've got to trim and weed, and you've got to plant, and you've got to mow, and you've got to reorganize and pick up the litter and whatever else. For the garden to look good, it takes effort. A bomb in a printing press does not produce an encyclopedia. A bomb in a junkyard doesn't produce 747 jets with fuel in a runway and a pilot. Explosions and chaos does not produce order. You can't clean your room by throwing a grenade in. It takes a different process. So the second law of thermodynamics is a tremendous problem for evolutionists, because they're suggesting that everything's evolved in violation of what are known as scientific laws, observable laws, entropy, things run down. If you never bath, wash, comb, trim your fingernails, if you don't brush your teeth, if you don't wash, clean, and iron your clothes, you will begin to look like a mess after a few weeks, as witness some of the people live in the streets and do so. So, plainly, the law of entropy is at work in everything. And Lord Kelvin formulated that. Lord Kelvin was the first scientist to use the concept of energy. He declared, with regard to the origin of life, science positively affirms creative power. Science proves Christianity. You see, the evolutionist, to prove what he needs to, he's got to find millions, actually billions, of transitional forms. Can't find one. When there's nowhere a half dussy, half elephant, even though they want to say they're the closest natural relationships. You don't find a half cow, half whale wandering around somewhere between the sea and... You don't get transitional forms of anything. Much as they might try, they still haven't found a half man, half ape. There should be billions of transitional fossils, transitional life forms, and transitional species around right now, but they're none. Not one. The missing link is totally missing. It's not just a missing link, it's a missing Grand Canyon. It's a missing chasm. There's nowhere any transitional forms. And so, what we see out there proves creation. We see everything in their own species and all self-reproducing, from the seeds, the plants, the trees, to the people, and the animals. Joseph Lister, the English surgeon who developed antiseptic surgery and the use of chemical disinfectants, he stated, I am a believer in the fundamental doctrines of Christianity. Maybe you've seen Listerine. Listerine's one of the antiseptics out there. Well, that comes named after him. Then there's Carl von Linnaeus, the pioneer of modern botany. He laid the foundation of natural history by devising a system of classification whereby any plant or animal could be identified and related to an overall plan. He introduced the method of naming each type of living being with universal terms that could be recognized in any language. And he used the Bible to provide the framework for scientific classification of plants and animals. By the way, we've got a reminder in Cape Town of how people have messed this up. We've got a place called Tigerberg. There's Tiger Valley, and the radio station I have a weekly radio program on is called Radio Tigerberg. Well, anybody with a basic knowledge of animals knows there's never been tigers naturally found in Africa. So what's Tigerberg? It should be Leopard Valley, Leopard Valley. They saw a leopard and they thought it was a tiger. They didn't realize the difference between spots and stripes. And by the way, a tiger can be twice to three times the size of a leopard. Have you played with a cheetah? Cheetahs are impressive cats. I've played with them quite a lot. But let me tell you, a cheetah is only 45 to 50 kilograms. A leopard's 120 kilograms. A leopard's double the weight of a cheetah. A lion is 220 to 250 kilograms. A tiger's 300 to 350 kilograms. So a lion is five times the size and weight of a cheetah. A tiger is six times the size of a cheetah. And they confused a leopard for a tiger. So they had everything wrong. I mean, they were completely wrong. He's about a third of the size and he has spots, not stripes. But anyway, we've still got places in South Africa like that called Tiger Valley, Radio Tiger Valley. But who wants to rechange it right now and admit they've been dumb all the way along, even though it should be Leopard Valley? James Simpson, 1811 to 1870, was the founder of gynecology and anesthetics. And he was inspired by the scriptural passage that God made Adam fall into a deep sleep before taking a rib from him to develop chloroform and pioneer the beginnings of modern surgical anesthetics. Now, if you've had an operation done, you can be very glad for this, because before that, they gave you a piece of leather to bite. Well, maybe sawed, pulled, gnawed, drilled, or whatever they had to do. Can you imagine? Anesthetics are a good invention. And there he is reading, God made Adam fall to deep sleep before he pulled out the strip. And that inspired him. Matthew Fontaine Maury is the father of modern oceanography and hydrology, and he derived many of his ideas from the Bible. By the way, Matthew Fontaine Maury was a Confederate naval officer, and he helped pioneer the science of naval warfare, submarine warfare. He helped develop the first torpedo that actually sunk a ship, and the first submarine, which actually sunk an enemy ship as well, Yankee Federal Forces, of course. So here's a Confederate naval innovator. And by the way, you know, the first submarines and the first torpedoes were developed in the American War between the States by the Confederates. Moray was the first person to chart shipping routes throughout the world. He pioneered the establishment of sea lanes, and he made possible the laying of electric cables across the ocean floor. Moray was inspired by the verse in the Bible from Psalm 8, verse 8, which speaks of the fish that pass through the paths of the sea. And this inspired him to study, are there paths in the sea? Everyone before thought the sea is just uniform. There's no concept of what was beneath the ocean. Do you know now we found there's some parts of the ocean so deep in the Pacific Ocean, you could take the tallest mountains in the world, Mount Everest, and drop them, the whole Himalayas, into the Pacific, and it would be covered by water. We've got places in the ocean deeper than the highest mountains on Earth. And they found some creatures down there, so colorful, so interesting. If you go to some of the more interesting aquariums, you can see some of them in special casements. Colorful. Nobody in all of history knew they existed. Why did God make such colorful, interesting creatures to inhabit depths that nobody would have known about for most of history? Well, God sees them. And we can see the hand of God in everywhere. Moray declared, the Bible is true. And science is true. The Bible is authority for everything it touches. God is the great architect who planned it all. So God is the programmer, he's the architect, he's the creator, he's the author of everything. It has been pointed out by Dr. James Kennedy in his book, What If Jesus Had Never Been Born and What If the Bible Had Never Been Written, two excellent books that I recommend you look at in your library. Science could not have developed amongst those who worship Allah because of Islam's fatalism. If Allah wills, it's the will of Allah. Islam has not pioneered anything. I know they try to pretend they have, but the only things they can claim are what they stole. because they invaded other countries and plundered. And so I've heard Muslims say, we had flush toilets and street lighting in North Africa in the 7th century. I said, I know, but you didn't have it in the 8th century, did you? You see, they conquered Christian civilizations that were very advanced, and they could plunder, but it didn't last very long, because all it can do is consume what others have, steal what others have. But Islam's invented nothing of significance. You name all the inventors of anything that we use, everything from the light bulb to our glasses, laptop computers, anything out there, name one who's one of the inventors whose name is Muhammad or something like that. Abdullah.
I think
sorry?
Algebra.
No, that's rubbish. They never invented algebra. They tried to say that they conquered the people who invented algebra, the Christian Assyrians. So the Christians in Assyria, yes, they had algebra. What's even called Arabic numerals, they didn't invent either. They took that from the Christian Assyrians in the Middle East that they had conquered. Everything of significance that Islam can try and claim for, even their minaret designs, they adopted that from the Byzantine Empire. There's nothing original in Islam. Islam just conquers and plunders. There's a lot of interesting things on. When you get into science, science has overwhelmingly been the domain of Christians, especially over the last 500 years. All the real advanced science, it comes from the Christian world. Science could not have developed amongst Islam's fatalism, nor could science have been birthed from Hinduism, with its reincarnation concepts, or Buddhism, because of their belief that the world is an illusion, and we must just escape from this illusion. Nor could modern science have arisen in our modern humanistic culture because of humanist belief that life is irrational and illogical. By rejecting the notion of absolutes, humanists reject the very foundation of science. If there are no absolutes in nature, then results in experimentation could only be relative. If everything is relative, then engineering and other branches of science become impossible. If you go to universities, you will find in the arts departments, the philosophical departments, the literature departments, the psychology and the political science departments, people liberal, very liberal, extremely liberal, immoral, psycho, and all that. But when you get to the engineering departments, you suddenly find the people are far more conservative and more likely to have a Christian worldview. Why is that? Engineering is real life. All the others are philosophical, building castles in the clouds, and that sort of thing. It's not real, it's a whole lot of people's ideas. The people have to build a bridge across a river. They've got to do this precisely. Now, recently I went up to Zambia, and there's the Victoria Falls Bridge that the British built in 1903. And I'm one of those people who stops at museums and checks out things and actually reads the exhibits. And there they were telling us how the Victoria Falls Bridge was built in 1903. Every single part of the entire Victoria Falls Bridge was made in England, from the steel, the assembly, the making. And it was all shipped out, literally shipped out, brought up by train and ox cart to reach Victoria Falls. And they assembled it there. And the final piece, the British engineers had determined what time of the day, early in the morning, that you had to assemble it, put the last piece in the middle. So they built from two sides and exactly met in the middle. And they put the last piece in, and it had to be early in the morning, in a cool weather, because as it got hotter, it would expand and it would be perfect. Here we are, 105 years later, and that Victoria Falls Bridge is still standing, and it now takes pentatectican 18-wheeler, 18-ton trucks over it. There was nothing in the world heavier than an ox cart that they would have thought would go over that bridge back in 1903. They built it so strong and so well and so efficiently in another hemisphere, two oceans away, and it's still working well today. That's the engineering of the past. Today you get these idiots making things that fall apart in the first flood, or even collapse before there's even anything else. But engineering is a real Christian art. That kind of precise work. You can't build a bridge on humanism or evolution. Maybe it'll stand, maybe it won't. Maybe it can hold cars up to 3 tons. Maybe over 4 tons at once. Maybe 18 pentatectons can pass over, but on 19th it'll collapse. You can't operate like that. Engineering needs to be precise and it's got to work every time. You can't afford to have hit and miss the way we feel about it when it comes to air traffic control or water purification plants. It's got to be precise. And so engineering is a thoroughly Christian science. A proper philosophical base for investigating the universe was needed. And only the Christian doctrine of creation has provided that logical base. The Creator established laws for people and laws for the natural world. And these laws, like the law of gravity, are immovable. I know the Hindus and some Hollywood films like to think people can levitate, but it doesn't happen. A created universe was expected to have design, order, and purpose. Man, using his created rational mind, could study this ordered universe in a rational way and seek to discover its laws. Modern science is based upon the assumption of scientific law. Now, of course, there's a horde of humanists out there and evolutionists who are following all the scientific laws, inconsistent with their philosophical world and life view. If they were to operate in terms of evolution, they wouldn't believe there is such a thing possible as science and engineering. Because they talk about everything's a result of random chance. Just, it's a cosmic accident. How could you have order? Anything you and I say wouldn't even make sense. There could be no logic in anything we say if we were the product of random chance. We're a product of accident. You don't get order flowing out of chance. If I'm hiking in the mountains, and I like hiking in the mountains, and I come across a bunch of rocks, 5-6 rocks on top of one another, a can. I don't assume they sort of fell there. I know somebody put it there as a sign that you're on the right path. If you are going along on the ocean and you come across your watch, there's a watch lying out there. You don't assume, well, millions of years of ocean waves and sand has come to form this watch with Iron Man Timex and so on it even. You don't assume that. I mean, if somebody was to say to you, millions and millions of years ago, some metal formed into the form of a can, and then red paint dripped on, forming the shape Coca-Cola, and then brown liquid came into it, and a Coca-Cola can just evolved. Idiot. Somebody made it. There's design, there must be a designer. Watch, there must be a watchmaker. Building, there must have been a builder. Now, I haven't seen the builder who built this school. I haven't necessarily seen the architect, not that I know of. But I know there must have been an architect, there must have been a builder, because I see the evidence. Building equals builder. Creation equals creator. Design, designer. Intelligent design proves that. The evolutionist has to operate in a Christian worldview when he plots the path of satellites. But he might philosophically defend random chance, accident, no order, from goo to the zoo to you, that sort of thing, mud to monkeys to man. But in practice, he's got to act like a Christian when he plots his scientific calculations. Now, in addition, the moral laws given by the Creator establish the ethical basis for science. The ethical basis. Scientists must be honest and truthful. If this universe was not created, if it's merely the product of chance, then no intelligence would be involved. There'd be no reason to expect the universe to operate in a rational or consistent way. Man's mind would be the product of chance and would not be capable of reason or logic. Hence, a materialistic philosophy, that's nothing exists except what you can see and touch. A materialistic philosophy could not provide any foundation for science. The irrefutable fact is that Christianity gave birth to modern science. The scientific revolution began in the Protestant Reformation, and the Bible played a vital role in the development of scientific discovery. And Bible-believing Christians founded every major branch of science. Every single branch of science was developed by a Bible-believing Christian. So the Bible essentially created science. When we get into a car, when we start the engine, when we turn on the lights, when we drive to a hospital, when we receive an anesthetic before a painful operation, but when we have an effective operation done in a germ-free environment, we need to know that we owe it all to the Protestant Reformation. As Sir Isaac Watts declared in the great Christmas carol, "Joy to the World." Jesus makes his blessings flow far as the curse is found. No more let sins or sorrows grow, nor thorns infest the ground. He comes to make his blessings flow far as the curse is found, far as the curse is found, far as the curse is found. Any questions?
Is it possible for a non-Christian religion, like a South American Maya space went to invent it?
Well, the fact of history is they didn't. They invented ways of ripping out people's hearts and how to kidnap neighboring tribes and march them up pyramids and chop their heads off and rip out their hearts and all that stuff. They didn't exactly even have the wheel. They didn't. They hadn't invented the wheel. Even their language was very crude. It was a form of hieroglyphics, but wasn't a proper alphabet. So, but the funny thing is they did have a calendar. They had observed the outside world somewhat, so a bit of a lunar calendar. But it didn't come down to much. All they did was worship the moon and the sun by chopping off people's heads and ripping out people's hearts. So people can say, well, other religions might have, but the fact of history is other religions never did invent anything remotely resembling the scientific and medical revolution that blesses all of us. Everything around us that we find useful came from the Christian religion, particularly of the Protestant Reformation. So according to, now these two books that I mentioned, which are well worth your study, they're in your library. What if Jesus had never been born? What if the Bible had never been written, both by James Kennedy? He makes the point that no other religion could or did produce the scientific revolution that only came out of a Christian base. Others have hijacked the fruit of it, but the roots are firmly Christian.
You see, they did invent the binary system, right? And the concept of zero, but it led them nothing came out of it. And we only know that because of archaeology. So in the West, during the Protestant Revolution or Reformation, all of that was put into actual meaningful, everyday thing. Whereas they knew that it was just something that was wrong. And we only discovered that recently.
Yes, indeed. Do you know the inventor of the printing press, Johannes Gutenberg? He had to borrow a large sum of money, and it took him over 2 years to print the first Bible, which was in two volumes, the Gutenberg Bible, two volumes. It's so huge. Of course, technology is very new at that stage. So he's getting this done, and he's almost finished. And the banker who had borrowed the money from came and possessed the whole thing, and for decades later, this banker took the claim of having invented the printing press and took the glory for a while. It's only after the death of Johannes Gutenberg that history restored the fact that Johannes Gutenberg is the only one who invented and did it all, and just because of him not being able to pay back the debt in under the 2 years offered, a promise, because he hadn't yet been able to finish it, to sell it, to get a return on the investment, that they stole everything and he died penniless. I mean, this happens sometimes. You get inventors and others to do the hard work, someone else grabs the glory, but in time, your sin will find you out and things come out into the light. And Johannes Gutenberg has been fully rehabilitated, even though at the time he died in somewhat of disgrace for being a debtor. Remember, there was a time when he went to jail for debts. These days, you go to Parliament.
There was a scientist who pointed out that the recipients of the world, and how can we have an assurance or a good enough Bible?
Well, I don't believe this global warming business. We've just had the coldest winter in Cape Town that we've had in decades. And we drove through snow on the way up through the mountains up from Cape Town. I remember in the 70s when I was sitting in a school desk like you, the big fear was a new ice age. Everything's getting cold and cold and everything's going to be covered in ice and we won't be able to survive. There won't be enough food. Can't grow anything, this ice is going to cover the whole world, the ice packs are expanding, and we saw these graphic pictures, and you see all the documentaries, there's no doubt the whole world's going to be covered in ice. That was in the 1970s, and now they're talking about global warming. Look, there are fluctuations in the world's temperature, but they go up and down. Do you know, there was a time in England, when the Romans went there, that England was a warm temperate zone, almost Mediterranean climate, where they could grow vines. But in the 1700s, it got so cold in England that the Thames froze over solid. No ships could go in or out, and people walked across the Thames River. That's how cold it was in the 1700s. Temperatures fluctuate both ways at different times. And they've even found the ozone layer contracts and expands at different times. They found recently, all the studies are, the Antarctic is expanding in real terms. There is tens of millions of tons more ice in the Antarctic now than it was the previous year, in the previous year, and so on. Tens of millions of them. The Antarctic's growing, not decreasing. But every summer, you can go, or spring, and you can film huge amounts of ice falling into the ocean. That's just normal. I mean, it's spring. Sure, there's going to be a lot of... And yes, you'll get some polar bears floating on ice floe up in the northern Arctic Circle, because it's spring. But it's going to expand again in winter. This is just the ebb and flow of the world as God's made. So no, I don't believe any of this global warming stuff. I don't believe the ozone layer thing or any of these other things that these humanist scientists keep coming up with. The vast majority of Christian creation scientists deny and doubt all of this rubbish. They believe it's basically a scam for governments, particularly the United Nations, to interfere more in infringing people's freedoms. Because you need to create a crisis that people say, something must be done. Then the government or the United Nations steps and says, we'll take that and we'll take that and we'll take control of this. And we say, oh good, at least somebody's doing something. They created a crisis to steal more of your freedoms. So I don't believe it. You know, the greens are like a watermelon. They're green on the outside and they're red on the inside. Green on the outside, they pretend to be concerned for the environment, but on the inside they're red communist, because the solution to all the problems is we need state control of things. Whereas it's been proven without a shadow of a doubt that biggest destroyers of everything are governments. I mean, take for example people having their guns stolen. Give your guns into the police, but the police have their guns stolen and lost at a greater rate than the rest of the population. The police lose and have stolen guns vastly greater than the rest of the population. So if there's a chance that our guns might be stolen in private hands, we must give them in a central place where it's easier to steal them. Makes sense. Okay. Then, for example, they'll have things like, education's in a mess, the government must make more laws. But it's the government schools that are in the biggest mess. Yes, well, we must have more government schools and put more money into it. But they get into a bigger mess. We mustn't allow private schools. We must control private schools. But they are the problem. And you can go through any problem in the world. You take Zimbabwe. The economy is not good. Government stepped in. So what I do? 2,000,000% inflation. A brick costs more than 100 mansions cost in Zimbabwe in 1980. Everything, $75 million for one loaf of bread just a few months ago. I'm out of touch with what it is now. $1 billion notes worth nothing. Just incomprehensible. The government in Zimbabwe is the problem. They're not the solution. And every law they make, everything they do, makes things worse. If you put governments in charge of the Sahara Desert, there'd be a shortage of sand. They're just incompetent, corrupt, useless. If you were sick, would you want to go to a government hospital or a private Christian hospital? If you wanted a good education, would you go to a government school or a private Christian school? It's obvious. Everyone knows that private is better than government, and yet they still scream, the government must do something. And governments make a mess. The biggest destroyers of the ecology are communist governments. The Soviet Union managed to destroy the Ural Sea, the third largest sea in the world, third largest inland sea. They destroyed it by over-irrigating from it, so that fishing villages were now 100 kilometers from the shore. And all the fish had died, because the concentration of minerals was so intense that they couldn't sustain life. National Geographic did a whole study, the third largest inland sea in the world, the Ural Sea, destroyed by the Soviet Union. Only communist governments could do this. The destruction of the forest and the Danube River by the huge dams they built in Hungary was so destructive. It's incomprehensible damage. Red China's got the worst pollution in the world. They decreased just about everything, and for the Olympics, they closed all factories, no cars were allowed to operate, and no fires allowed to be made, etc., all over the whole area for the duration of the Olympics. And they were shooting special anti-pollution mothballs into the sky or whatever to disperse pollution. They managed to bring it down to only 500 times worse than the pollution of London. Now, people may not like the pollution in London, but Peking's 500 times worse after they've done all this. No factories open, no cars driving. Governments are the biggest catastrophe the world has ever seen. They kill more people, they destroy more, of the world's land surface. And then the solution to global warming and the solution to destruction of the environment is give the government more control. You have got to be kidding. The United Nations can't even bring peace or stability to Rwanda or Bosnia, and they think they can control the world best. Private enterprise has been proven to be the most efficient way of doing anything. Governments have been proven to be the most inefficient, corrupt way of doing anything, and certainly the best way of wasting. So, global warming, I think it's just another in a long line of scams used by the United Nations to usurp national sovereignty, interfere in free enterprise, make more laws, and destroy more of the planet. Yes?
So what about Einstein? What could you tell us about Einstein and what he contributed to?
Well, Einstein was obviously a genius, but he didn't develop any new branch of science. I mean, he came after the foundations had all been laid by the other scientists. And he was very angry when people started to use this term of relativity for morals. He said relativity has nothing to do with morals. Morals has to have absolutes. So he was teaching relativity in other areas of energy, not E equals mc squared and all of that. I haven't seen Einstein as significant in terms of developing the branches of science. And that's all this is trying to do. But I've drawn much of this from the greatest sense of What If Jesus Had Never Been Born and What If the Bible Had Never Been Written from James Kendall. Those two excellent hardcover books. Have got chapters on science. You can go and read a lot more on it, just showing how it all came out of Protestant world and life view. Einstein, of course, did still operate within a Christian world and life view. He was no atheist evolutionist.
It's just interesting. I've been reading a little bit, a book that I'm reading is called Superconscious, Christ's Perspective. And he mentions in there the decline in the West in health. It goes hand in hand with this decline in belief in God as the creator and the owner of the world. There's recently, I don't know if this is put on the board, but there was recently a thing in the Time magazine, an example of a sort, of a woman who was in a hospital emergency room in America for 3 hours. She had died in that waiting room. She had died and fallen on the floor. She was dead. For 3 hours she lay there. People walked past her. Hospital nurses and people walked right past her and just left her lying there. And only when a cleaner came and turned her over did they discover she had died. She was waiting for treatment. And that's in America. And there's definitely a correlation between our decline in health care and our government's view of life and how it works. And the same with college.
How is it possible for a non-Christian country like China and India to be so successful?
They're not that successful. You wouldn't want to live there. You wouldn't want to live in China or in India. Yes, they managed to manufacture a lot of things, but mostly through slave labor. In China, most of the made in China things you get are made by slaves. Many of them would be Christian slaves. You can't beat the price of slave labor. They're in concentration camps, they only get food and lodging, not good at that, but they don't get paid. Now, yes, you've got a lot of productivity coming out of China because they steal all Western patents endlessly. All the things that the West has designed, they make and they copy. So they'll copy anything. They'll make good toys, good McDonald's toys and whatever. They can copy and they don't develop or innovate anything. So what the communists have done in China is they've got a communist totalitarian one-party dictatorship as the government. No political freedom. But they're using the free enterprise system of the West in order to build up their economy. So that even if you buy American flags in America, they're made in China. Very strange things like that. There's even Bibles that we buy that are printed in China. Because printing in Asia is much cheaper. When I get Bibles printed for Sudan, they're all printed in Asia, never in China. I mean, we'll get them printed in South Korea, in Taiwan, or in Singapore. Those are the cheapest and good quality. If I wanted to get them printed in Kenya, which would make sense because I'm only wanting them to go to Sudan, Kenya will charge me 4 to 5 times the printing bill for the same product. and actually not be as good. The Singapore and South Korean products are much better and one-fifth the cost. Therefore, instead of paying $10 a Bible in Kenya, I can pay $2 a Bible and have five times more Bibles by getting printed in Singapore. So the Asians are getting more work because they're willing to work harder for less money. The Africans are chasing all investment out of our shores by overtaxation, by government greed, by labor being so unreliable, so lazy, and greedy, and not doing a proper job. So Kenya, even though I would like the job to be done in Kenya, because then I don't have the transportation complications, but Singapore says, don't worry, we'll do the transportation. We'll deliver it where you want, and it'll still be cheaper than getting it there. So Singapore gets the job. And this is what's happening. Africa is chasing away investment faster than anything. And it's worldwide known. We've got some of the laziest laborers in the world. And that's why Africa, with 10% of the world's population, has got only 1.4% of the world's productivity. And that wasn't the way it used to be. In the 1950s, Africa was heading to tremendous heights in the future. Rhodesia was showing the way for everyone to have electricity by 1980, by hydroelectric plants, the Kariba Dam, and there was great hopes. That's why the Soviet Union said you've got to destroy Rhodesia. The race relations are the best in the continent, the educational standards are the best in the continent, communication systems, agriculture. Rhodesia was showing the way for the whole of Africa to be lifted up. That's why they had to crush, sanction, terrorize, destroy, get in a scumbag like Mugabe to destroy the country further. Because they didn't want this, didn't want Africa to be lifted up, they want Africa to be turned into a playground for the Soviet Union and Red China. And unfortunately, people have voted one dictator and socialist after the other. Now, China isn't free, but China's got a powerful economy. But it's entirely built on the West buying their goods. It's our economies that are fueling theirs. It's our inventions that they've hijacked. India, well, there's parts of India where they're very productive. There's many things where they've managed to get jobs like diamond cutting, diamond polishing, and computers. I mean, there's an amazing amount of things that they're doing in India. It's giving a lot of people work. But most of India is still living way below the poverty line. The squalor in much of India, you would not want to go to most of the hospitals. You wouldn't want to go to a lot of what's out there in India. So India's pulled itself up, but I don't think anybody in here would be happy with the standard living that the average person in India has to have, or the healthcare for that matter. But India is definitely on the increase. Bear in mind that there's millions and millions of Christians in India, tens of millions. There are 300,000 evangelical churches in India. William Carey did a lot of work. While the Christians are nothing near a majority, Christians have obviously had an impact because some of the richest parts of India, most productive, are where the Christians have a high impact, like Nagaland or Calcutta, where in particular there's a very strong Christian presence. So some countries, like Japan, have done well by copying the West. They've got the fruit of the West without the roots. They didn't take the Christian roots, but the constitution was written up by a Christian, General MacArthur. And there's many missionaries. At the moment, there's 3 million Christians in Japan, which out of 100 million is not much. Like 3%. But very influential. And Japan still, though, has the world's highest suicide rate. So Shintoism isn't a great religion. I think it's important to always look at everything, economics, everything in light of the scriptures. Biblical economics brings prosperity. Sometimes a country can implement biblical principles, like Japan, without having the faith. And there's a blessing. Biblical principles work. And so they've got biblical principles of government, biblical principles of economics, and they're being blessed, but they don't have the faith. So they've got some of the fruit without the roots. I don't know how long it'll last in Japan. But Japan could be the one exception of all, of a fairly free, fairly prosperous nation, but still it's spiritually dark. That's why there's so much suicide.